Okay, we're going to get into some more specifics and some of the exploration of the options that we can get into under Medicaid. And Terry and I are going to be kind of tag-teaming on this. Disclosures, of course, nothing to disclose. We're going to talk about a range of policy strategies, and this is in the context of a much larger financing picture, which I'm sure you're all well aware of. So what we're going to be dealing with here in the context of Medicaid is not an exhaustive list of options, but it certainly seems to be exhausting. And some of the pros and cons, strengths and weaknesses of each of these approaches. And where possible, we've included some examples of states that are going after these strategies. Just want to acknowledge this has come out of work that we've been doing for some time with the University of Arizona, and this is through my consulting firm, Community Resources. Terry, who is a frequent collaborator and really a valued partner, was the principal author of a policy brief, which should be coming out fairly soon as a result of this work. But it's based on interviews with stakeholders, the usual suspects. And the context that I want to mention to you, there's available through the personal scheduler page for the annual meeting. You can download handouts, including the ones that Romano was talking about. There is a handout with three columns about sort of a global approach to the looking at the options for financing, and it has like three columns here. I won't describe it in detail. There are some hard copies on the back table if you want to grab one of those. And again, as Romano said, if you don't get one or can't get it through the website, be glad to send it to you. So sustainable financing, many people regard as one of the biggest challenges to expanding the engagement of community health worker workforce. We're seeing this in a lot of ways. There's growing interest, particularly over the last 10 years and accelerated by the Affordable Care Act, in a number of areas. And some of the areas that are seem to be of most appeal to payers include chronic disease self-management, care coordination, care transitions, and preventing hospital readmissions, and of course, home and community-based care and enabling people to remain in their homes. But as Romano pointed out, the Affordable Care Act does specifically name community health workers as primary care professionals. We're seeing a great wave of innovation and transformation in the payment system, some of which Romano included in her presentation just now. And we're seeing that providers have, and indeed health plans, have a lot of flexibility in who becomes part of the team, who provide team-based care. And so it's some of the barriers that have existed to including community health workers are coming down. As an illustration of the level of interest in this, this is a webinar in February run by the National Academy for State Health Policy, which was, by the way, one of the largest in terms of attendance of any webinar they've ever held. There were over 900 people on that call. And this was a live poll that they took during during that call. So clearly the interest is there. So I'm going to turn this over to Terry to introduce the Medicaid aspect.
How do I change this?
The right arrow.
This one?
Yep.
Okay. Hi. There is a lot of overlap in particularly Romana and our presentation, although we're sort of stepping back and just looking at the language of Medicaid and the strategies really help you understand just some of the techniques and strategies. So in the case of Medicaid, you know, why is everybody so interested in Medicaid? Why is that an important strategy for getting sustainable funding for community health workers of some kind? For one thing, you know, obviously community health workers, the history of working in oppressed communities, as Danny says, the low-income, the history of working in anti-poverty movement. So working with low-income people is what community health workers have very often done. Medicaid covers low-income people. Of course, Medicaid is expanded under the Affordable Care Act in most states. There are still a bunch of states struggling with that, which means more people are covered, low-income people, under Medicaid. And Medicaid regulations are really influential. I've interviewed payers with Stacey Chacker here, and we learned for a project, we learned that, you know, a lot of them, even the commercial private payers, look to Medicaid to see what they cover, what they authorize, because that gives a legitimacy to what they might consider covering. So Medicaid really, a lot of folks look to Medicaid, health payers. Of course, there are challenges and limitations to Medicaid, and we all probably know what many of those are, as well as opportunities. The challenges are pretty much, this is a medically necessary kind of payer. The services they cover are mostly clinical. That's been what kind of, they've been a health care medical payer. So it's usually clinical care. And even for the preventive services that have been, that we'll talk about in a minute, that they define as preventive, they really require to be related to a diagnosis. So the primary prevention work and community organizing work that community health workers always do, have often done, and hopefully still will do, are not likely to be paid for by Medicaid. Now, I've learned in my brief history with Medicaid never to say never, because Medicaid is nothing if not a complicated system that has many exceptions and many mechanisms involved. But, for example, the increasing emphasis on population health may stretch that a bit. But in general, we may not see a lot of community health worker services covered by Medicaid, so that's important to recognize. On the other hand, the opportunities are here, as Carl has talked about, as Ramana has talked about, with the health reform, and all of these kinds of initiatives that Ramana talked about and that we'll talk about really give a lot more flexibility to who's covered. And, of course, the famous around our community health worker circles in the country is the 2014 CMS rule change, which allowed state Medicaid offices the option of paying for non-licensed providers to deliver approved preventive services if they're recommended by a clinician. So that really woke up a lot of community health worker advocates and community health workers around the country to all kinds of possibilities. So, okay. Got a rush. So Medicaid state. So this is strategy one: Medicaid state plan amendment. You have to have a state plan amendment if you're going to institute that rule change. The advantages of that is that it would make a policy change permanent, and it would make CHWs have actual provider status with Medicaid. The disadvantages we've all learned is that it's politically difficult because Medicaid is really nervous about having an approved provider. They're afraid that this would cause increased charges, which, you know, we can talk about later. But as a result, no state plan amendments have been passed under this ruling as of yet. We have two states that sort of operate with this. Minnesota, we all know, got a state plan amendment passed years ago before this recent rule change through legislation in their state. It was approved by CMS. But that's fairly limited services. They can bill community health workers if they are trained through a particular training program and certified. They can bill through licensed providers, but their services are limited to education and they have a monthly time cap, and that's been a challenge for advocates in the state, or have pushed to raise that time cap and been successful. And they're also pushing now to have care coordination be among the services paid for. South Carolina is an unusual case. They actually did a pilot, right, and that pilot has been stopped at the moment, but we tried to figure out how they got CMS approval to do this, because community health workers were being paid under that pilot in a number of community health centers, but in fact, they just went ahead and did it. They didn't get CMS approval, but in any case, they were planning on getting CMS approval. Right now, it has stopped.
Okay. This is you.
Okay, so a second major direction. I apologize that we're moving quickly because there are a lot of options and a lot of things to say about them. But most states are at least partially, and in some cases heavily, into managed care as a vehicle for financing care under Medicaid. And they are paid a per member per month fee, but they have a lot of flexibility in how they use the money that they get. And a lot of them are already paying for or employing CHWs directly. And many of them are beginning to see the advantage in doing so. And the example of Molina Healthcare, which many of you are familiar with, who saw a tremendous financial return from a care coordination process involving community health workers with super utilizers, they are taking that now to all of the states where they have Medicaid contracts. But the one of the disadvantages with health plans is that their capitation rates are based on historic costs. And those costs in the past generally did not include community health workers. So there is a process of negotiation in terms of capitation rates for the health plans, or the health plans themselves see the need to negotiate adjustments to the capitation rates to include CHWs. And we have to remember, and we hear about this all the time, it's almost daily, concerns about the low rates that providers are paid under Medicaid, which really puts a lot of pressure on the system to keep the money going into direct patient care. Now, there's some instances in several states now where the states themselves are getting adventurous with this. And New Mexico is learning from the Molina Healthcare example, which was piloted in New Mexico, and now their health plans must encourage the use of community health workers for care coordination, and they're getting into a greater emphasis on community health workers in patient education, but they are including community health worker services in their Medicaid benefit package, and this is huge. So there is movement along this continuum, but they are learning, as Ohio has learned with community health workers in improving birth outcomes, that they can encourage the health plans to consider the savings that result in factoring that into the cost of services. Michigan, many of you are aware that recently they put their managed care contracts out for rebid. And this is a big step because they're requiring all of the new health plan contracts to offer community health worker services or peer support specialists. And this is specifically for patients with behavioral health or complex care needs. And this is part of a theme that we're seeing, which we'll talk about in a later presentation as well, that the integration of behavioral health and primary care is a huge opportunity for introducing community health workers into the discussion. But they're actually setting a standard in terms of at least one community health worker per 20,000 members. We have to remember that not all of their members are really going to need the assistance of a CHW, but at least it's a start. So there's certain things that they can do, and the health plan must establish what their payment mechanism is going to be for that. So there's also, and this is a different set of rule changes. These rule changes have not yet taken effect, but they were proposed in May of 2015. And this is a set of rule changes related to the regulation of Medicaid health plans. In the past, many states would regulate what they call a medical loss ratio. I won't get into that in great detail, but it's basically saying that they can't spend too much on administration or profit. But in a number of states, the Medicaid health plans were exempted from that standard. But the CMS is encouraging the states to include them now. But what many folks are not aware of is that payments for community health workers, whether they're paying providers or CBOs or to employ community health workers or the health plan employing CHWs directly, that these expenses can often be described as quality improvement efforts or efforts to control costs, which do not have to be counted as administrative costs. And so there's a lot more that health plans can do in most states than maybe even they realize. So I'm going to turn it back over to Terry to get into our third major strategy.
So the third major strategy is it's an alternative. It's a more temporary version of the state plan amendment. Maybe a fun way to think about it. Waivers. Waivers, you probably all heard about. Medicaid offices at the state level have waiver requests to the federal Medicaid offices all the time. And they are really coming around to be very handy now when health reform initiatives are allowing them to get exempted from existing Medicaid regulations to try out new systems, payment systems, and service delivery systems. So when we looked at all the states that have Medicaid coverage in some form or another with some kind of program for community health workers around the country, most of them were getting permission to do this through the state waivers with the feds. Let's see. So the two example states that we have, and of course I guess you could say that the limitation with waivers is that they're temporary. Although they last for 5 years and you can renew them, they're not a permanent change like a state plan amendment. Texas is an example of a state that is... Oh, I'm sorry. I'm forgetting the slides, aren't I? Oh, well. whatever. So Texas is an example. They have used this complicated DSRIP, which is the Delivery System Reform Incentive Payment, and I'll forgive you for not understanding that. It's basically just a funding mechanism that they're taking some monies that were given to hospitals to help them serve the uninsured, and they're now giving the states who apply for this program a way of paying for other services, as long as, in this case, they're part of a collaborative and integrated system for low-income people, and then they can use that money to have some kind of alternative and enhanced payments to help pay for these other services. And community health workers are very much a part of these systems, and they do the kinds of services that Carl mentioned earlier that Medicaid, you know, covers much more comfortably. They navigate, they do care coordination, care transitions, chronic disease self-management, and so on. And then in the case of Oregon, which is another interesting example, next slide. Thank you. thank you for being my assistant, Carl. So in Oregon, the demonstration, another, you know, health reform demonstration with a waiver, and Oregon has created kind of a Medicaid managed care system, coordinated care organizations. Those are their accountable care organizations throughout the state. This has been going on for several years. And they receive a fixed, both of these efforts, by the way, with waivers, involve some kind of alternative or global payment, as, you know, to reinforce Ramana's point. So they're not just a waiver, they're a waiver for a whole change in the systems. And so in this case, they receive global payments and they also get some extra payments to provide services that will help improve outcomes. And in this case, what's really distinctive in Oregon is that a category of provider was recognized and required as a part of this system reform called traditional health workers. And that includes CHWs, peer wellness specialists, doulas, and others. And they are required and they are being used in the system. Okay.
We're going to do it. The finish line. So what we'd like to leave you with here and hopefully talk about either at the end of the session or afterwards, is that there are tremendous opportunities here under healthcare reform, and Medicaid is obviously the big enchilada. Okay, and there's several themes that we're seeing in the opportunities, the options that are available to the states, including the flexibility that managed care organizations already have, and that is increasing, if anything, and the emphasis on value-based payment. There's a wedge through which community health workers can enter the discussion. The concept of team-based care, which has come up earlier this morning as well, in medical homes and ACOs, and a trend towards the integration of population health and behavioral health into health care. The recognition that these cannot be treated separately, that health care has a responsibility for population health, and that behavioral health is really inseparable from treating the whole person. But we're really seeing prominent roles for community health workers in state innovation models in a bunch of states where they are either part of the care transformation design or they are part of the state health workforce strategy, or both in some cases. And so those states have great opportunities. So we need to understand where the money is going to be available on the front end. There's a lot of... Sorry? Thank you. and where the payments are going to be for primary care and population health. and to encourage urge the state health plans providers to make sure that their cost calculations include the cost of community health workers as well as the anticipated savings. Okay. And I can't say this often enough. You're going to need to, if you're not already involved in this, invest time in basic education awareness among stakeholders. It is still true, it's hard to believe after all these many years, decades, that very few of them still really understand who community health workers are and how they operate. So thank you very much.